morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is the United States v. Partee. Mr. Hansmeier.
May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Dan Hansmeier, attorney with the Federal Defender's Office in the Central District of Illinois. I represent the appellant, Michael Partee, in this appeal. I've raised three issues in this appeal. The second two are sort of contingent on what happens with the first. So I probably won't talk about them. If we can't convince you on the first, then the second two go away. So I'm going to focus on the first issue because I think that's why we're here. That issue is whether a prior conviction, a 1996 Georgia state drug conviction, is a controlled substance offense under the career offender provision.
So, Mr. Hansmeier, let me just jump in and say that I recognize the argument that you're making that we haven't already resolved this, but even if we haven't resolved it already, which perhaps we have, I can't look at that Georgia judgment without, at a minimum, finding it ambiguous as to whether it was a subpart A or a subpart B conviction. And if it was ambiguous, then under Shepard, under Woods, under Nijawan, whatever it is, you can look at these additional materials, the indictment, the colloquy, to disambiguate, to figure out, is this a subsection A conviction or is this a subsection B conviction? And we decided last time, and I would say the record is pretty clear, that it was sales, which makes it a controlled substances offense. And I recognize that you are making an argument that such a judgment would be void under Georgia law, but that amounts to a collateral attack on the Georgia judgment. And under Custis against the United States, the Supreme Court's decision, you're not allowed to do that in this posture. The conviction is the conviction.
Well, two responses. One on the ambiguity of the judgment.
I'm saying at best it's ambiguous. It might actually be pretty clearly just a conviction under the indictment that charged him with sales or distribution.
Right, but it unambiguously imposes a 2-year term of imprisonment.
But notice, though, you're already saying it's the judgment on an indictment, never amended, for sales, and yet it has the 2 years. And so what I'm saying is the best I can imagine for you is that there's ambiguity, which under Woods lets you look at these at this limited set of additional materials to see whether it's a subpart A or a subpart B.
I guess my point is that if it unambiguously lists a 2-year term of imprisonment, then it is unambiguously a possession conviction.
How come it's unambiguous if the indictment was for sales?
Well, then the indictment says possession and sale, and it lists, and it says Georgia Controlled Substances Act. It doesn't list any particular provision. So it's for both.
Well, I just have trouble seeing that as clear, let's put it that way.
As far as the collateral attack, I mean, it only becomes... It's not a collateral attack. He's not challenging the conviction.
Well, yes, he is. You're trying to say that because this 2-year sentence would be unauthorized for a sales conviction, that this you have cases cited in your brief saying such a conviction would be void or under Georgia law and so on and so forth. But I'm saying this isn't the court or the time where you can raise that point.
And that's my point as well. My point is that if this court says this is a distribution conviction, then this court has said that conviction is null and void under Georgia law.
No, we have not. That's exactly where we disagree. If we say it's a distribution conviction, there may be some Georgia problem with the way they did it, but under Custis, we cannot change the fact of that conviction.
But it only becomes a problem if this court says it's distribution. I mean, if it's a possession conviction, then there is no problem. The conviction is valid.
But if if we were to follow your logic and see it as a possession conviction, it would be inconsistent with all the rest of the evidence in the record. We're trying to figure out what was he charged with. The state judge tells him repeatedly during the colloquy, you're charged with selling. These are materials that can be looked at to figure out which section of a statute was violated.
Right, and it's to figure out which section of the statute
was violated.
Right,
is it an A or a B?
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. It's not, that, and that's all we're trying to figure out. You're
right.
Claiming that it was an A, and the state judge tells him it's a B.
I don't disagree that you can look to the Shepherd materials. I don't disagree with that.
That, I think, is...
I think you can.
...conclusive on his...
But the point of the Shepherd... The point of looking to the plea colloquy is not to determine what he did.
No, of course not. It's to determine which part
exactly.
of the statute did he violate. That's why I
exactly.
keep saying, is it an A or a B?
And it's an A.
Subpart? No, it's not. I mean, but not according to what the state judge told him. The state judge said, you are here because you sold, and that's B.
Well, that's true. But he imposed a 2-year sentence, which is A.
Well.
You know, that's, I think that's
what if
where
that's
we're
common in Georgia, even though the statute requires a 5-year sentence for
right.
this offense, not a 2-year sentence. Probably looks like a possession, not a sale conviction. I understand that, but what if judges in Georgia are just imposing a sentence that's less than this mandatory minimum?
Then they're imposing a possession conviction.
They're convicting him of possession. Might be violating Georgia law, but they're not.
I mean, distribution is possession. If you distribute, you possess. I mean, he clearly violated. I mean. His plea colloquy indicates a violation of both. Based on the sentence imposed, we know that it's possession.
We don't know that.
I think we do. Because the categorical approach.
The judge is saying, I don't care what the mandatory minimum is here.
It's a plea bargain. It's a plea bargain. I mean, that's what happens.
There's no evidence of a plea bargain here at all.
Sure, there is.
The Georgia court says the first count involving an allegation of sale, two allegations of sale of cocaine. You understand this? And he says, yes, it's sale.
Right, and I acknowledge that. He admitted that he sold cocaine. That is true. That does not mean that his conviction is one for distribution. I mean, you can admit anything in a change of plea colloquy. And it doesn't mean you're convicted under a particular statute. I mean, the point of the categorical approach is the statute of conviction, not the actual conduct.
We understand that perfectly well. And this particular statute is divisible. It has a part that criminalizes possession, and it has a part that criminalizes a whole slew of things, including sale or possession with intent to distribute. And our problem is which of those two sections...
Right.
Did this man get convicted for in Georgia? And the indictment said it was the sale part, and the judge said it was the sale part, and there's a judgment, and whatever sentence the judge, I mean, you can infer backwards, but I'm telling you that I think the best you can get from that inference is to a point of ambiguity. You might not even be able to do that, as Judge Evans says. Maybe it's just a 2-year sentence for distribution.
But it can't be. Can't be a 2-year sentence for distribution.
Well, that would be a ground for a collateral attack in Georgia.
But why would he collaterally attack that?
No, he wouldn't. The government could, but the government chooses not. The state of Georgia chooses not to. So,
well, then it's
everybody's happy. Got a 2-year sentence for sale.
But it can't be a 2-year sentence for sale. It has to be possession.
Look, the whole reason there are collateral attacks is sometimes things happen that quote can't happen. I mean, otherwise we wouldn't even have this animal.
But this didn't happen here. He got 2 years, and under the statute of conviction, it's possession. I mean,
Mr. Hansmeier, what is the logic that says that the sentence finally imposed trumps the dialogue?
Well, I think in a...
From a logical standpoint.
I mean, from a logical... Well,
yeah, now
it's
your logic would say when we got 2 years, we don't look to dialogue.
That's exactly what I would say.
I just want to understand your position.
Yes, that's exactly right.
So they could be talking about the Brewers and the Cubs. It doesn't matter.
Exactly.
It's just that he got that.
And the logic.
What if he got a year? What would be your position if he got a year?
Is there a mandatory minimum?
I don't know.
Under this statute.
Is a year not consistent with either?
Correct.
Right.
Well.
C says not less than two years nor more than 15. D says not less than 5 nor more than 30. So Judge Long's hypothetical.
Well, then we would be under a different statute. I mean, there's nothing that this statute isn't identified in any of the charging documents. It's not identified on the judgment of conviction. So if it's less than 2 years, there must be another Georgia statute that would control. My logic comes from what the Supreme Court has said, what the Supreme Court said in Taylor, that there's a Sixth Amendment jury trial problem if we start looking to what individuals did instead of what they were convicted of. This is from James v. United States. Under the categorical approach, we look only to the fact of conviction in the statutory definition of the prior offense.
That's my inquiry. Is there an equal sign conviction 2 years or an equal sign conviction, in this case, 2 years plus the dialogue that ensued
right.
prior to the imposition of what may have been, as Judge Evans says, an illegal sentence or an improper sentence.
Right. I mean, I just disagree with the proposition that this was an illegal sentence because 2 years is consistent with possession, and possession is identified in the statute of conviction.
Want to save a little time?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hansmeier. Mr. DeWall?
May it please the Court, Ronald DeWall on behalf of the United States. The Shepherd materials here show that Georgia conviction was for the sale of cocaine, which is a controlled substance offense as defined under the career offender guidelines. As you've pointed out, the Georgia Controlled Substances Act is a divisible statute. It has one section that penalizes, amongst other things, the sale of cocaine. That's subsection B. You have another section that penalizes the simple possession of cocaine. That's subsection A. So the question is, because there was ambiguity in the lower court because of the defendant's sentence, the district court and later on this court looked at the Shepherd materials. They looked at the plea colloquy. They looked at the indictment. They looked at the judgment. And that's exactly what the modified categorical approach in Woods described. This court undertook that analysis in the first appeal and agreed with the district court that the Georgia Controlled Substance Act was the offense of conviction. That was the question. What was the offense of conviction? When you looked at the Shepherd materials, you see that the indictment charges in count one and count two, that on two separate days the defendant did, quote, possess and have under his control and did sell cocaine. You see from the plea colloquy that he was repeatedly admonished that the counts include the sale of cocaine and that the state was going to proceed on the counts alleging the sale of cocaine.
Would there, under Georgia law, have been any signal that the charges had been pled down if the two-year sentence was supposed to signal what Mr. Hansmeier is arguing that it does?
I didn't see anything in the actual Georgia statute, but what I did see is in the judgment of conviction that there is a box to suggest that the case had been pled down to a lesser-included offense. In this particular document, that box is left unchecked. What is checked in the judgment of conviction is that the defendant pled guilty to the indictment as alleged in counts one and count two, further showing that this is a conviction to the sale of cocaine.
Straight back to the actual indictment, not to anything else.
Correct. Furthermore, Your Honor, so that the Georgia judge advised the defendant at the time of the change of plea to the maximum possible penalties of 30 years imprisonment, which is the maximum possible penalty for the sale of cocaine. And then finally, Your Honors, you have the factual basis to support the change of plea to sale of cocaine.
Why would they impose an illegal sentence there, then?
As we indicated in the first time around, we don't know. We don't know if it's simply that the Georgia court just simply gave the defendant a break or what happened. The record doesn't reflect one way or the other as to why he got a two-year sentence versus a five-year sentence. But the specific question...
I don't know if this regularly happens in the Georgia courts where the
I don't know the answer.
Judges want to give a break to a defendant and the state doesn't appeal.
I don't know the answer to that. But
can the state appeal?
I suppose, yes, I mean, they could. I mean, I think they have the same law in effect down there that they could have appealed for the reasons that the defendant now states, but they didn't. And the important analysis here is what is the offense of conviction, not what the ultimate sentence is. And that's really the only reason why we have any ambiguity here, because everything else points that this is a sale of cocaine charge, a controlled substance offense. So after review of the record, you see that the district court got it right. They reviewed, did limited review of the Shepherd materials. They determined what the offense of conviction was, that it was a controlled substance offense, and therefore the defendant, because he had all the other requirements, was considered a career offender.
So I have a different question for you, Mr. DeWall, which is why it happened in this case that if we were not looking at the career offender provisions, if for some reason we thought that that was an error, why has the guideline calculation been so impossible to come up with in this case? We commented on that last time, and reading through the transcript of the resentencing, people are throwing all sorts of numbers around, you know, this, that, 29, 26, 30, 34. This doesn't seem to be all that unusual a case to me.
It's not, and the problem, though, is that there were so many different variables, and once those variables were beginning to get to become ruled upon, that there was mistakes made in finding if this applies, then this is the offense guideline. If it doesn't apply, then this is the offense base offense.
Maybe that's
offense
an argument for writing it out in advance and having some order of discussion.
There was, on both ends, multiple layers of discussion. On the front end, and as you see from the PSR, we have various different supplemental PSRs with
seven
which to
or
work.
Eight of them? I mean, just some phenomenal number.
There was a lot, and you include the problems with the Edwards decision and the crack cocaine and everything else to lay upon everything else. And then also, Your Honors, is that another problem here was that the defendant was objecting during the sentencing hearing to other things that were not queued up or teed up in filings. For example, the fully automatic issue became an issue in the middle of the sentencing hearing when the defendant just say, hey, can I say something? We object to this. So,
And is that why the judge made no fine? I was troubled by that. That the judge doesn't really nail down that gun in the offense of conviction, not the January gun, but the later gun, is fully automatic. You know, he just sort of sails by that point.
In the second, I don't know why the district court ruled in that particular scenario, or made the comments that it made at that particular point. But in the first, and if we should get into this one, and once again, the government agrees with defense counsel that this really is not the central issue here, because if you agree with the career offender guidelines applies, then we don't even get to this issue. And if it doesn't apply, then it's going to be remanded. But if you look at the original sentencing transcript, it clearly the district court judge ruled that their offense of conviction involved a fully automatic firearm.
I'm not sure that I'd go so far as to say clearly about this, but I thought that he made a somewhat ambiguous statement that might have been referring to the January gun and might have been referring to the offense of conviction gun.
Well, in the specific language he used during that initial sentencing was, when you look at these weapons involved, an automatic machine gun that you're going to put in the hands of a drug dealer. I mean, that's exactly what the post-arrest statement said, that he was obtaining the fully automatic firearm to go sell it to somebody else. That's factually, that fits right into what the facts were presented.
That was in his 3553A discussion?
Correct. And
so he doesn't really make a nice, clean finding about that gun.
And that's true, Your Honor. That's true. As we indicated, the career offender is the central issue here. We're asking that this court affirm that sentence, the defendant's sentence.
Thank you, Mr. DeWall. Mr. Hansmeier?
On page 35 of our appendix, there's a form, question 14. Do you understand that the district attorney has made the following recommendation? 2 years. This is a plea bargain. This was the DA saying, I'm going to give you 2 years if you admit guilt. Mr. Partee admitting guilt and getting 2 years.
But why would it then in the next paragraph say the maximum sentence for these charges would be 90 years? That sounds like 30 times 3, not 15 times 3.
Yeah, I know. You're right. It is.
So aren't we back to ambiguity and then the colloquy?
Well, no, because, I mean, you can't deny the fact that what the indictment says and what happens at the plea colloquy, I'm not denying that. Really not.
And I'm just saying I can't get too much help out of paragraph 14 on the page you just referred us to. Paragraph 15 throws it all back into chaos again.
But my point of saying that is that we're talking about a bargain. I mean, think about, I had these reckless cases, like Woods. I had the Jonathan Gear case was mine. Okay, Jonathan Gear pleaded out to reckless discharge of a firearm when he deliberately pulled a gun and shot at a vehicle with people in it. Okay, what did he actually do? That's aggravated discharge of a firearm, and he's a violent felon. But because he pleaded down, it's not, and he's not a violent felon. I mean, the same logic applies here. I mean, Mr. Partee can go in there and say, yes, I distributed drugs. But if he only gets 2 years, it's not a distribution conviction. It's just not. I mean, if it is, I mean, nothing makes sense. Nothing makes sense if it is.
Other than an improper sentence makes sense.
But that's this court. I mean, think if a Georgia court said...
From the standpoint of makes sense. I'm not disagreeing that what you say makes sense. I'm just saying, isn't it on the other side, in a proper sentence makes sense? Just as a happening. Just as a happening. Not saying it happened here. Why wouldn't that make, quote, make sense? Mr. Hansmeier, you keep talking about making sense. We appreciate your position, but how do you refute?
It makes sense because he was charged with possession as well. That's why it makes sense.
Well,
and he admitted possession.
They scratch out, in your dialogue with Judge Wood, you know, you point to 14 where they have 2 years and they scratch out something. Who knows what,
yeah, right.
What that is. And then we got the 90 years.
Right.
So I can understand you want to focus on the two.
Well, the 90 is fine with me.
The 90.
That's fine because that's the maximum. If it's sale.
That's 30.
and if it's sale, it means that he could get, if he pleads to sale, that he could get 30 or 90 years.
But it just tells you that document does not reflect a plea bargain. That document is still pre-bargain, if you will, where there's still everything is still on the table, or it wouldn't have said 90.
But on page 41, there's the district court tells him. 41 of the appendix, the district court says, refers to that. We also discussed your case at some length during the pretrial conference. You know what the court's likely sentence would be in the case. Aside from the discussion, has anybody promised you anything? Aside from the discussion, has anybody promised you anything? He's been promised 2 years. And I don't think that's ambiguous. I don't know how it would be.
Okay.
All right. We understand your position. Thank you, Mr. Hansmeier. Thanks to all. Mr. Chang. Okay.